A little bit later in England, that's where we find our first guest of the morning, Jonathan Gould. Now, Jonathan Gould, of course, very familiar to us. He has been of late with the unsuccessful, I think it's fair to say, All White campaign, just unsuccessful. But Jonathan's been already the Phoenix coach on two occasions, 2009 to 2011, 2012 to 2015. Then he headed back to England to take up posts with sides like West Bromwich Albion and, of course, Middlesbrough as well, Preston North End, and currently he's working with Bristol City as well and some of their sides. But yesterday afternoon it was announced that Jonathan will be coming back to coach the Phoenix in the goalkeeping department. So we say a very good evening to Jonathan Gould, England Time. Nice to catch up with you, mate.
Good morning, Ian, and thanks for the intro, and lovely to speak to you.
Yeah, it is actually. I should say on the back of that, you had 157 games for Celtic, as well as a number of other English and UK sides as well. Okay, Jonathan, this is term number three for you as the goalkeeping coach. Tell us what lured you back, mate.
Well, first of all, it's been sort of part of my coaching journey. Secondly, the job was available, and thirdly, it's a fabulous football club that spans 15 years as a professional outfit in New Zealand in the A-League. And I think it's a privilege to be able to come back, and it's a privilege that people want me back as well, Ian.
Okay, well, so from your own personal point of view, do you see this still as part of your development? What would be your ultimate goal in terms of being a goalkeeping coach, or do you have head coach in mind at some point?
No, I think someone once said to me, you know, when you're a specialist, probably to stay in that way. I think you know. Goalkeeping coaching in the Premier League was something that was very special to me at West Brom with Tony Pulis. But I think it'd be great if we could not just get the Phoenix into the playoffs. And I think it'd be fantastic. We get them into the final and win it at some point.
Okay. Have you been able to catch up or stay in touch with the Phoenix as a club? I mean, obviously they've had a lot of clubs around the world. They've had a pretty tough time not being able to play at home. So have you been able to follow them at all, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, I've only been back in the UK for the last sort of 7 months, Ian, as you know, and so you watch them from a distance. I think everyone in the New Zealand's been watching from a distance. The commitment that the staff and the backers have made during the period of COVID, and the challenges that they've met by living away from home and living away from the families. I mean, you know what it's like as a cricketer. You go away for a period of time, and your loved ones are left behind. And I think they've done a remarkable job through that time. And I think coming back this year, you'd like to think that all the supporters come out in Wellington and make it a really tremendous season for us.
Well, one of the interesting things as well, of course, since you have been here, they've had a Wellington Women's Phoenix team as well. And the club is really starting to evolve with new facilities as well, the New Zealand Campus of Innovation and Sport. So it's all progressing quite nicely.
Yeah, and I think it's important that football clubs have legacies. You know, I think you look at the clubs I'm at Bristol City now in, and they're kind of part of the city sports group. So they've got the women's football, they have the rugby club, and they've got the basketball, and it's all tied into the city. And I think, the Phoenix now, with the academy and the quality of players that are coming through that and the opportunities that it's providing, and obviously the women's football team that was started up this season, you know, you've got three entities there that can be a big part of New Zealand.
Okay, so what do you know about the goalkeepers that who are on the books of the Phoenix who you'll be working with? Ollie Sale, of course, we know, but what about Ollie? Has worked with the All Whites, etc., and who else will you be alongside?
Well, yeah, I've got knowledge of Ollie since he was a 17, 18-year-old lad, and he's always had an incredible amount of ability, and now he's turning that into reality with his form last season. I've been able to work with Alex Paulson over a couple of periods last year when he was preparing for the Olympics. I've been heavily involved with some of the under-20 stuff. So we've got Albie Kelly-Head, and then we've got Henry Gray There's been some tremendous work. I mean, Ryan Ego has been doing it in the academy, and more of late Ruben Parker. And there's some really talented goalkeepers all over New Zealand at the moment.
So if you look at a standard week, I know it's early and you've got a lot of planning to do, etc., Jonathan, but in a standard week, how much work would you put in with goalkeepers?
Cool. Hours, on and off the park. We've got the ability now with some of the format that you have on the internet. There's information readily at hand. We can show instant video of the forwards that are coming up against. I mean, physically, the work that we do, when you look at probably a typical day, you might get 50 minutes to an hour with the goalkeepers. As a goalkeeping group, they'll then go with away with the outfield players, and they've got their weights, they've got their prehab. There's a lot of work that goes into a week's preparation that leads into a football match on a Saturday or Sunday.
How's it changed, Jonathan? How's the role and the preparation, etc., of goalkeeping changed since your day with Celtic, for instance?
I still used to get fat tested, Ian. It was 20 years ago, and it was probably more of a challenge for us in those days because of the way we live. But I think what's changed is the level of professionalism and the support that these athletes nowadays get on a daily basis, and the way that the heart rates are monitored, all the GPS is monitored, everything that goes into it now. You probably can't hide as an athlete anymore, Ian, like we used to.
What's the way here?
Yeah, sorry, I forgot you were a piece of
Oh, I've changed. Don't worry about that. Hey, listen. On a more serious note, you've just had this campaign with the All Whites. I watched very closely. We saw Danny Hay looking pretty calm and cool and collected throughout the whole deal. But I did notice Jonathan Gould get up off the bench from the dugout when Costa Barbarousos received the red card, and you looked like there was a little bit of steam coming out of your ears. What were you feeling at that time?
I thought we were really harshly done to not just Costas. Costas a fantastic young man and he's a good footballer, and I don't think there's been any intent whatsoever. And when it comes to challenges like that, I think it has to be considered. I just found it very strange that all of a sudden VAR became or had a massive impact on a World Cup fixture like this, and I did think we were hard done to. The alleged foul that led up to the goal. It's still tough. It still hurts, and it'll probably, as Danny said at the time, it'll probably hurt even more when we watch Costa Rica play in the World Cup in November.
Yeah, probably will, actually. Can you tell us about the conditions in Qatar? Because when they first nominated or decided on Qatar, everyone else thought, well, how are the players going to handle this? How are the fans going to handle this? What was it like? Yeah.
The facilities are absolutely outstanding. And, you walk into the stadium and I think they can set the temperature anything between 16 and 22 degrees. The one thing you do feel is the air conditioning being blasted into the stadium. The surfaces are absolutely magnificent. And funny enough, there was a Kiwi groundsman out there that was in charge of all the surfaces, and I called Bede that we spoke to, and it is going to be a spectacle. They've built some tremendous stadiums for viewing. And I think by November, I think we were in Qatar earlier in the year, and the temperature wasn't too bad. I mean, when we were there, we couldn't walk outside last week. It was 45 degrees on one occasion. But I think the way they've set everything up, when it comes to the performance that you see, it certainly won't be hindered by a temperature that doesn't allow athletes to perform at a high level.
Just getting back to the role of the goalkeeping side of things and looking at penalty strategies. Now, of course, what did you make of the Australia-Peru situation where in the 119th minute they changed goalkeepers? I mean, I'm not quite sure. I've seen that before. That's a strategy you would be involved in if it was to happen in any team you were there. What did you make of that? And Andrew Redmayne's antics, I suppose, in terms of distraction. What did you make of that sort of saga?
I think the last time I remember seeing it at that kind of level was Holland. I think Holland took Cillessen off or put him on, and that worked. And I'm led to believe that the only people that knew were Arnie and Andrew. I don't think even Matty Ryan knew. I think his antics on the line, I get all that. He's not the first. If we go back 25 years, Bruce Grobbelaar did it. It might be 35 years now, actually. Bruce Grobbelaar did it in a Champions League final. The one thing that I wasn't happy about was Andrew throwing the water bottle away. I thought that lacked a little bit of sportsmanship. Other people would say, well, you know, if that's what it takes to get to a World Cup, I just had a little bit of an issue from a goalkeeping union perspective. That upset me a little bit. But the other antics, you know, they're well within the laws of the game.
How much is a mind-on-mind thing when you come to those penalty shootouts? How much does the mental side play from a goalkeeping point of view? What are you looking to do?
Well, first of all, the reason the Peruvian goalkeeper had that information on his bottle is the preparation. And we had somebody that had basically put algorithms into a computer based on what he'd seen from all the penalties that had been taken by the Costa Ricans. And we had exactly the same preparation. We had a water bottle with every single penalty taker that we might have faced with his preferred side, even the height of that penalty, and a percentage on that. And we would have gone on that algorithm. You know what it's like, Smithy, at that last moment in the cauldron. An athlete might change his mind, and a top professional footballer also has the ability to do that.
I'm fascinated by that. I have never heard of that. When you look at going that deeply, I mean, how long has that kind of strategy been around, that kind of information given to a goalkeeper?
I probably, when I came back in 2015 at West Brom, we had all that information. You know, you have Wyscout, you have Instat. All these statisticians around the world, they sit at home and they watch these games, and even less than 24 hours after a game's been played, you can have every single stat about every single player, about how far he's passed the ball, who he's passed it to. It's quite remarkable now, and you know, you'll have seen it in cricket, you know, with their computers, and you know how often. In the old days, how often would David Gow waft outside his off stump and give his wicket away? Yeah. That's the kind of detail that we get, to the nth degree.
That's absolutely fascinating, Jonathan. When are you back in New Zealand? When does your gig start as such?
Yeah, I leave the UK July 4th, and I think first day back at work will be July the 11th, and we're straight back into it. And I'm pretty sure, I think that the FFA draw gets made next Wednesday, so we'll already have ideas of opponents in that pre-season tournament.
People that know you, and a lot of people, of course, familiar with you in New Zealand, know that you mentioned the word legacy before. Well, the old name is thick with legacy in football. First of all, how's Bobby, Dad Bobby? And of course, Matthew was part of the All White squad as well. And what's he up to, and how's his development going?
Yeah, Matthew's just signed a 1+1 year deal at Altrincham. They're full time, and he's looking forward to that. He's been a very dedicated young man throughout his career, and I'm very proud of him as to what he's achieved. I think he's got more levels in him even from this point. Dad's retired from cricket, Smithy, at the age of 76. I think he played his last game for Portishead a couple of weeks ago. I think he managed to get one off the square and crack one through extra cover, and he thought, right, I'm not going to do that very often at this age. So I think he's put the bat away, mate.
Great to hear that. You're all well and things are progressing nicely. So look forward to seeing you in person when you're back in New Zealand. Hopefully you can get up this way, as you've still got a home here as well, I believe. So it'll be nice to see you, mate. Yep. But it's great news. I was really thrilled to see that you're back with the Phoenix. So thank you very much, and all the very best, mate. And we'll catch up soon, eh?
Thank you, and thanks for your support as well. Appreciate it.